Fuck! Well, that wasn't very good. I'm Robert Evans, host of the podcast you're listening to, and ashamed of, probably, because Jesus Christ. Garrison, come in here.
No, I refuse.
Save this. Fix this.
I refuse to
participate. Fix this, Garrison. This is It Could Happen Here, a podcast about the fact that the world is falling apart, as embodied by me falling apart when I try to introduce the show. See, I tied it in.
Yeah, good job.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
It's well, poetry. Garrison, it rhymes.
It is. It has to rhyme. It's like the Star Wars movies.
That's what I was doing, yeah.
Our guest today is Melissa Asadera, founder and director of Polo's Pantry, a mutual aid food distribution project in Los Angeles, California. Melissa, thank you for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. A pleasure to be here.
I apologize for the introduction, but it was better than I usually do. Sophie can back that up.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm an LA native, and I've been doing community organizing for probably like close to a decade, doing a lot of community work for a long time. And a few years before the pandemic, actually, I started to organize with a lot of grassroots organizations in LA, working with a lot of houseless folks all over LA. And kind of clocked pretty early that a lot of groups were burning through their budgets, spending it on food. And mm-hmm. So since I worked in kind of the food industry, I started to kind of poke around and figure out that we could get a lot of these things donated to us. And pretty much started building a roster, like building kind of like a Rolodex of other organizations, nonprofits, food banks that we could rely on. So almost kind of created sort of like an alternate system for these groups who are working with houseless folks to get food every week. I just wanted to figure out a way to make a steady and reliable system so that our unhoused neighbors would get food and that organizers across LA wouldn't have to worry about it. And so that's pretty much how Polo started. Officially, it started in 2018. I was organizing with a group called K-Town for All, and they do a lot of political advocacy and mostly rooted in like kind of, you know, human rights for our houseless neighbors.
If you don't know K-Town for All, look them up. They're awesome. Follow them. Fantastic
yes,
organization.
Please. Yeah. And, you know, I actually was, because I was already doing a lot of mutual aid work in Skid Row around that time, and really kind of felt at some point that, you know, like, yes, it was great that I was going out there with teams, getting hot meals out and hot beverages, whatever people needed to people, but I just was so down on the conditions, seeing all the conditions that they were living in, and I just wanted to meet other activists and other folks who could really figure out how you connect people to services and just really, you know, anyone working in policy that's really changing things for people out there. And so I wanted to take sort of my advocacy and like my work a step further and connect it with activists all over LA. And so that's sort of like my org is really rooted in a lot of activism and organizing. So I see a lot of, I'm not sort of your standard kind of org or nonprofit. I really see things in the lens of as a community organizer, and so that's why our work just pretty much exploded during COVID. So
I'm kind of interested for starters, because you know this is a mutual aid project as opposed to kind of a charity
yeah.
project. And what do you see as being the dividing line there?
Yeah, well, for us. You know, it's very easy for folks to kind of see the work that we do as part of the kind of the charitable food system, because obviously mm-hmm. we're, you know, mutual aid. It's the difference really is that obviously, you know, there's a reciprocity between the two of you, between neighborhoods, between individuals, between organizations, of sharing resources with each other. And charitable obviously is like there's only one way, right? There's only like one person giving, but for us, the way we picked our partners, I mean, we were already part of this nucleus of kind of a coalition of orgs doing this work. And so it was just really very easy for us to kind of share resources with each other. So I was doing food and some folks were doing hygiene kits. Other folks were doing tents. Other folks were doing tarps or whatever. And so there was so much, you know, kind of mutual aid and activity going on. And so that's why we're really kind of rooted in that thinking, as far like as opposed to charitable orgs that basically just set up somewhere and give stuff out to people. And so we have, like, in part of my advisory circle are a lot of houseless neighbors, houseless leaders in our community. I also take a lot of advice from Indigenous organizers, Black community leaders in different neighborhoods that we work in. So our work is really informed by the community. And so we basically ask folks, hey, you know, like, what can we do? And plug into work that that already exists in those areas. I hope that made sense. But that's kind of how I feel about what we do.
And as an organizer, because I think we get a lot of questions from people who are interested in starting mutual aid projects in their own areas. Uh-huh. And one of the questions we often have is like, well, how do I do that, right? I'm interested in like if you could kind of walk us through the steps when Polo's Pantry got started, like what was the kind of order of operations that you had to go through to get this up and running?
I think the first thing to do is really to, for me, it was already kind of being part of grassroots orgs. So I was part of a few of them. And so it's really important to kind of identify the needs of a community first before setting up your org. So I feel like I already had an idea of, you know, of what certain orgs needed, which areas, how many. And so kind of identifying the needs first is kind of number one. And to do that, you really have to connect with grassroots organizations, local ones in your area. So, you know, I recommend really just kind of doing research. There's always folks doing that kind of stuff all over. If you're into political advocacy, there's folks that do that. If there are folks who are more food justice oriented, like I would recommend going to a local food bank, or soup kitchens too have also, like, I've been doing that for years and I've met a lot of people with kind of similar values as mine. So just kind of pretty much identify, one, what you'd like to do, what you're good at, and then essentially research, you know, kind of opportunities to tap into a local org doing that work, and then essentially start organizing with them, right? I don't recommend to build an org prior to not having this kind of knowledge, because I feel like it's really crucial to sort of kind of map out first what the community needs instead of you building mutual aid organization based on, you know, whatever, because I feel like it's important to work through things from the ground up. That way you feel like the work is impactful. That way the community is leading and informing your work. And so that's kind of like how I approach mine. So look for a local org. So kind of sit in organizing for a little bit. And then from there, once you guys identify what it is, and start to kind of have an idea of the demand or the need in that area, then start to reach out to, say, for me, for food, a lot of local chains will pretty much, if you tell them what you're doing, a lot of them will support you. So I started with just going literally to my local Ralphs and telling the manager there, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm starting this org. I wasn't.
Ralph's being a local grocery store in, like, the
yes.
Los Angeles area.
Yes, yeah, sorry.
A lot of, I didn't know what Ralph's was before I moved to LA. So I just wanted to be like, she's not just like rolling over to her buddy Ralph's house and be like, guys, you got some food?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so that Ralph's out here in LA.
Kroger, most places.
Yeah
it's Kroger, more or less Safeway. Kroger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will warn folks that not everyone is down for that kind of stuff, but you somehow you'll really end up on one that's really, you know, that is really kind. I think most folks have to realize that this kind of work is not, it doesn't happen overnight. Building a reliable network of people to donate to you is takes time. So, but I think if you hit kind of larger chains, you will get you'll start to get a steady supply from them.
Do you have any kind of advice for when you're actually approaching, you know, manager at a Ralph's or something, somebody at, like, who works for, like, what do you have, like, I don't know, not like a script, but kind of a rough guide to, like, here's how I try to start these conversations. Here's some ways I try to phrase things, because that could be useful for folks.
You know, I actually have like a form letter that I could share later. Maybe you can share.
Oh, that would be great. Yes. Yeah.
That, you know, that they can use to, you know, if they're going to solicit folks with that stuff. And I think a lot of mutual aid organizations do have that kind of literature, that kind of forum. So I think just basically kind of letting them know who you are, who you're serving, how often, which demographic it's going to, that's usually really important. What helped me though was I was as I started to get more serious about doing the food work, I connected to, you know, some community partners, and I actually turned Polos into a fiscally sponsored org. So we moved from being just fully grassroots to being fiscally sponsored. That basically means we're operating under the 501c3 number of another organization, of a larger organization. So that opened so many opportunities for us. It really allowed us to be able to access larger amounts of food and really help out a lot of smaller orgs that needed to get their food programs off the ground. And so that is something I recommend if people are serious about it, to find a community partner who is an established 501c3 that they trust, to see if they can sign on to be a fiscal sponsor. That I think is one of the quickest ways to be able to really kind of establish yourself as far as getting larger amounts of food. And by that I mean getting pallets of food, not just cases, but literally pallets of food delivered to wherever you are. As soon as we did that, that completely changed the game. And I think I did that because I knew I had so many friends who were doing mutual aid that needed so much stuff, from groceries to, fresh produce. And it didn't stop in food. We were getting, you know, hand sanitizer, we were getting tents, we were getting all sorts of stuff, you know? And so, that's what I recommend for folks who are serious about food, is to really, again, start to build a relationship with local businesses that they like, food businesses, and really telling people, this is what I'm doing. If you are willing to support us, you know, like, this is, these are the days that we need food or whatever, or these are the times that we'll need food, and just let them know that, you know, you're happy to like pick it up, or that you're happy to, because there's I think, at least for California, we're starting to change law, like policy and law behind food waste. And so I think something's going to change in January of 2022, where a lot of food waste basically going to decrease, because it's going to be much more difficult. The city is going to make it much more difficult for businesses to just get rid of stuff. They're really pushing them to separate them. But anyway, regardless, you're helping the business really move food waste, and most of them, and a lot of employees too that I've talked to, just are heartbroken every time they have to clear out, you know, a full tray, or just trays and trays of perfectly fine food. So
yeah, there's a video going viral on Twitter right now of like someone working at Dunkin' Donuts and just like dumping
yes.
hundreds and hundreds of donuts into the garbage.
Yep. And that happens every single day. You know, I have friends who used to work at Whole Foods, and they would tell me just how heartbreaking it was, just the massive amount of food that's being wasted out there.
Yeah, it's evil. It's evil.
It's a thing that in the more difficult days ahead, as you know, things like, well, like wheat under in a lot of areas, like the crop was half of what it normally is this year. That's going to continue. One day we will look at videos of Dunkin' Donuts like dropping an entire day's worth of donuts into the trash and use it as a pretext to bring executives to trial. It's going to be like a war crime.
It really is. I mean, honestly, though, as someone in food, you know, like the food system is changing massively in so many ways. I feel like the one kind of good thing that happened in the pandemic is that lawmakers were able to identify that the way SNAP or CalFresh, I mean, pretty much food stamps were not enough really to, you know, to feed families and feed people. It's not nearly enough though, but at least it kind of pushes the needle to where we needed to go. And I think having been so focused and so like in the center of mutual aid work in LA, I'm able to kind of broadly tell lawmakers too that, hey, you know, there's so much need out there, but the community themselves have built alternate food systems to be able to, you know, to care for themselves. I feel like my hope really is to be able to kind of hyper-localize our food systems. That way neighborhoods and really, like, communities are essentially dictating their own, you know, their own needs. They're basically bringing in the resources that they want. They're bringing in the kind of food that they want, you know, and really just working towards real kind of food sovereignty, where people are able to, you know, to get the resources themselves. And for me, I feel like mutual aid scares a lot of people because, again, it really is the sort of like the reason why we were able to, a lot of communities were able to survive COVID. You know, we're still doing it.
And yeah, we still are. Yeah.
We still are. We're so deep in it. And even like I try to tell students too, and like, you know, mutual aid isn't just food or whatever. It's also like, say, your dad has a pickup truck and your neighbor needs to move, I don't know, their dining room table across town. Like, that is a form of mutual aid. Or like there's so many things that, especially a lot of immigrant communities that I work with, this form of care, community care, you know, has existed forever. And it's just somehow elevated itself during the pandemic, because as we know, the safety net just wasn't enough. It really didn't help any, you know, it didn't really help a lot of communities. And so this system essentially kept people afloat. And now we're trying to figure out how to really create better ways to sustain it and to really create better ways to get the resources directly to communities that need them. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm working with other folks trying to figure out how to keep this sustainable and really have more agency over what kind of food and what kind of aid they want.
How have people that have been needing to access mutual aid in the food, how have they been learning about your organization?
I think, honestly, all this stuff really happened by word of mouth. I think because I was already part of this huge coalition that's part of the Sophie Knows at K-Town for All. There's a group called Street Watch. There's a group called Ground Game. There's a group called, like, there's all these different folks that basically are in our wide coalition. I haven't had to really advertise much. Like, people just sort of like just kept telling others, like, hey, you know, like Melissa Polos and her team are doing this. And also as a COVID response, I created another like COVID initiative called Homie Made Meals. And that is in partnership with another organization called eggs. And so as of today, I think we're close to 75,000 meals.
Wow.
That's all community led. Yes. So we since March of 2020, we essentially created a system where we work with people who are cooking homemade meals in their homes and connecting them to drivers. And so we have about six different org partners. So one of them is obviously it's the same people, K-Town, Street Watch, Covenant House. They work a lot with homeless youth. LA Can, they're in Skid Row, and a bunch of other mutual aid groups in different areas of LA. So I recognize at the beginning of COVID, a lot of my houseless neighbors were telling us that they were scared, like because a lot of businesses were closing, a lot of corner stores, restaurants, the food access completely shut off for them during the beginning. And I started to freak out. I was like, how are we going to get food to people? And so some friends who run, basically who run kind of like a youth, kind of youth focused org, wanted to activate their community. They're like, hey, how can we help? What can we do? And so we created this program basically that, you know, figured out like, okay, well, a lot of people want to volunteer, but they can't leave home. So why don't they cook meals at home? And then we'll just pair them with drivers who can pick it up safely. And so we just started doing that. We created this system to, and I think we honestly, I thought we were just going to do it for 2 months, but now we're what, like 19 months later, 70.
Oh, geez.
75,000 wow. Meals, over 1,000 volunteers. Like it's been wild. Actually, Jamie, friend of the pod,
and yes, hot dog yes. expert. She'd be angry if we didn't state that.
So Jamie actually is one of our OG like cooks. Like she started with homemade meals from the very beginning. She's kind of one of our. That's kind of how we know her. It's because she found that program. And it's been wild. It's been so amazing to really activate so many people across LA to cook for our houseless neighbors. And so I haven't even fully digested, our team hasn't even fully digested the real impact of that, but it's been 75,000 meals made by the community for our houseless neighbors. So I don't know, like I feel like, and I truly believe there's just so much power in the people, and really trying to figure out ways to continue to, you know, to create better systems where we can redirect those resources, you know,
totally.
to us and, you know, like really kind of break down these systems where, you know, because even people were telling me, like folks who are like, you know, in these sort of big institutions, food institutions who've been around for decades, or even folks from running food orgs since the 80s were like, you know, how are you able to move so fast? I'm like, that's mutual aid. That's mutual aid. The our ability to not have to run through so much bureaucratic crap and red tape is a reason why we were able to create such huge impact, because people believed in what we did and, you know, and helped support us, funded us. And we essentially just, you know, just hit the ground running. We were able to figure out what people needed on the ground and just got it to them. That's it, you know, and we'll figure out if we don't have it, we're going to keep, you know, we'll ask around for folks who have it. There's a group called Sila, they're in Silver Lake. And my friend Kat, who's one of the co-founders, they also work with houseless folks, and they do incredible work, providing showers, providing hot meals, providing wraparound services for folks. She was great at getting hygiene kits. And so that was our mutual aid between each other. Like she needed hot meals, so I gave that to her on Saturdays. And then I needed like hygiene kits. And so
And that's kind of like the basis of mutual aid.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I literally will give her 200 meals. She'll give me 200 hygiene kits. And that was like that throughout the pandemic. Like, we just would share resources. And people thought we were this huge org. But essentially, it was just, you know, literally like our friends and I talking to each other. Like, hey, what do you have today? What do you have coming in today? And we just essentially kind of built this sort of cloud-like sort of inventory, right? So it's like Polo's has 1,000 meals, and like Sila's got 500 hygiene kits, and like, you know, Street Watch has like 50 tents and like 100 tarps. So it's like we all were like, hey, you know, there's a houseless man on the corner of like Sunset or whatever that needs like blah blah blah. And so we essentially just, you know, just grab and go. Like Polo's has meals, and like Street Watch has tents. Like K-Town's got like the tarps. So we all just, again, beautifully just sort of started to like build this sort of cloud-like inventory of stuff. And it just worked, and it's still working. So,
And it's consistent, like is what you were bringing up or at the beginning is talking about how consistent you've able to have done this work, which is,
yeah,
if you're an LA resident, you know that, you know, the city's support is never consistent. So having that consistency is so vital.
Yes.
And
yes.
Impressive.
No, thank you. No, it's a lot of hard work. There's so much that people don't see. Obviously, there's so many things that people don't see. There's a lot of organizing behind it. There's literally a lot of community building.
A lot of meetings. Yeah.
I think the bulk of mutual aid is relationships and trust, you know, like that's really it. That's how you breathe life into your system. And it's like, you know, you have to continue to like nourish your relationships, you know, between yourself and other organizers, between yourself if you're running an org, between yourself and another org. And really that's how we've been able to, you know, to reach so many people, is because we focus on making sure that, you know, it's so easy to burn out in this work. But again, we also have to make sure that we take care of each other. And we focus on making sure that we're checking on each other too. And so I, you know, it's hard to fully explain how to even teach that, you know, how to properly build relationships. But I feel like that's such a key part of creating a really robust mutual aid network, and that's at least the experience that we had, you know, for Polo's.
Yeah, the work that you've done and what you've been able to accomplish is very impressive.
Yeah, it's huge.
And is something that a lot of people can aspire to. Is there any like resources online that you can point to if someone's wanting to get into this type of work, or any advice to get started in your own city, or to like look for stuff that's doing the similar that's doing a similar thing?
Wow. Let's see. Who has gosh, that's a really, really, really good question. Well, first I hope that people have read Mutual Aid by Dean Spade.
Sure.
That's a really good book. And from there, I would read the Black Panther social programs.
Yep.
I get a lot of my inspiration from there. And really that's really those two things to kind of start as sort of like your primers. And then if you want to kind of get deeper into food justice, there's a really good book I read years ago. I think it's literally called Food Justice 101.
Okay.
Let me see. It's literally called Food Justice 101. Yeah, there's quite a few, but one, that's one. And then there's one book I read called More Than Just Food. And then it's written by, yeah, I'll give you guys my top five, and that really kind of helps sort of, like shape my thinking on food justice. So it's written by a guy named Garrett Broad. And he essentially like kind of lays out sort of how the industrial food system kind of created this huge crisis that we're in. And, you know, like how there's, you know, there's really kind of an abundance of food everywhere. But yeah. You know, obviously
it's just not getting distributed.
Yes, exactly. And so and it also kind of lays out how food justice activists who are in mostly low-income communities of color help really build community-based kind of solutions to these problems. And so that's really kind of where my thinking and my lens comes from, is because I am a child of LA, I'm able to understand what different neighborhoods need based on, because I either grew up there, worked there, have family there, you know, went to school there, or just have friends or other organizers who live there. And so say if, you know, I didn't grow up in Boyle Heights, but I have friends who did. And so like, if I'm trying to build out a food program or a mutual aid program in Boyle Heights, I'm not going to just walk in there and be like, all right, we're going to do it at, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to take over their thing.
Exactly. But I think that's one thing I think I really want to for people to really, especially for young people who want to get to food justice, is like, you really have to really honestly do your research first and let community leaders lead your program with you, right? Well,
And there's a difference between like making community connections and then trying to like take over, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very, two very different things.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to be extractive, right? You don't want to be extractive. You don't want to be coming in and, you know, and really like, you know, try to like show up with like, you know, solutions where they weren't informed at all by the community. And I keep trying to stress that.
Yeah. Is there anywhere that people can support or at least follow you online to keep up with the work?
Yes. I'm very active on Twitter. We're at Polos Pantry. So it's P-O-L-O-S P-A-N-T-R-Y. And then I'm also tweeting as myself as an organizer. It's under M-E Smelly Music. So it's M-E-L-L-E Music. And that actually, that handle for me everywhere is like my personal. So I tweet from there a lot. I tweet a lot about food justice work. I feel, and all our work in LA. I retweet a lot of our movement work and coalition work.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to the show to talk about food justice and the work you've been doing. It's great to hear more examples of people from around the country, and then hopefully, you know, around the world getting involved in this type of work. Anyway, I think that it wraps up us today. You can follow this show on Twitter and Instagram at Happen Here Pod and Cool Zone Media. Subscribe to the feed, leave a 5-star review, whatever. Anyway, that's the show. Bye-bye, everybody. Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.